NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go! Back in the can for another edition of Lunatic Fringe into the Void, and fuck it. Who are you?
Everybody knows who I am.
Yeah.
I've been on here a few times already.
Once or twice.
Yeah, it's Junior.
Nice. With you. Nice. Mr. Ludwig.
How's everything going?
Oh, man, you know, it's another day, another dollar, up and down.
Yeah.
Weather's kind of nice and not doing too bad, although some people are freezing their asses off, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
End of the season for a lot of people. It's fucking 2021. We made it.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Do we get the COVID Pro or the COVID Pro Max? What's going to be the next one?
Right. Yeah. Oh god, fucking hell. Let's just stick with this one. I think. Who knows? I mean, hopefully, shit will start to get back to a little bit more normal in 2021, and by the time the season kicks in stateside, it's going. You know, kind of.
Either that, or everybody will be zombies from the vaccines.
That's what I'm hoping for, though, dude. It's either normal or zombie apocalypse.
I mean, everybody's been preparing for the zombie apocalypse.
I mean, I'm not sure which one I want more, because I'm
pretty sure Walmart's out of ammo.
I mean, I really right, yeah. I kind of want to know. Although, who knows? This just could be the slow motion zombie beginning.
Where they got to die first and then they come back as a zombie?
Something like that. I don't know. It's fucking whatever. Hopefully it gets better. But we were talking actually because I had you repack me.
Yeah, it's about fucking time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I haven't jumped in a while, man. I didn't jump before I went to Everest because I knew
you were afraid you were going to get hurt. And you didn't want to fuck up your trip.
Come on, what's the one way you know you're going to screw yourself up? You've got something huge, like lifelong bucket list plan to go hike to Mount Everest. How are you as a skydiver going to not get to do that dream?
Well, at your age, getting out of the bed would be more dangerous.
Fuck off. Fuck off. No, you're going to twist your fucking ankle, land in your little 96 because something silly happened. And it doesn't even have to be. I mean, I was scared to walk down the street for like the month leading up to Everest because I'm like, nothing. If I hurt myself trying to get to Everest, that's one thing. But if I hurt myself walking down the stairs out of the house.
I remember at one point, I think I asked you to go hiking. You were like, nope, too close to Everest. Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I'm like, no, there's not a goddamn chance in hell. So yeah, no way was I going to jump back then. But now I'm going to go jump again. So, and I had to have you repack me because it's been a year since I jumped.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you started giving me shit.
I did. Yeah. I gave you a little shit, one, because it's been over a year.
Yeah.
And two, because we really needed to go through your gear.
Yes, yes, for sure.
I'm glad you did decide to repack your main, though.
Yeah, of course. Well, it would have been such a soft opening, though. Or it would have been a brick.
I mean, either way, the reserve was just repacked, so.
Yeah, I think it would have been a soft opening, personally. A beautiful snivel, but.
I mean, I've left canopies packed for about 6 months before.
Yeah. Well, so what was it? They did these drop tests a bunch of years back between with reserves, military reserves, and they did drop tests with one that had been packed that day and one that had been packed like 20 years before, and like the opening times were minuscule between the two.
Yeah, fractions of a second, I believe, or like a second difference.
Yeah, which, so why do we have repack cycles?
Well, I mean.
Because riggers like you need to.
No, because. Depending upon the conditions where you're living, you know, military stuff is all stored well. And for anybody that's out there right now in their winter season and they've got their gear shoved someplace that it shouldn't be, I mean, we should be keeping our gear in someplace that's cool and dry. We don't want to keep it in a moist area that's, you know, heat.
Sure, sure.
Well, in the trunk of your car for the entire winter isn't necessarily the best place to have it.
Right. Speaking of that, when people are packing up their shit for the winter, they know they're not going to be jumping for a few months anyway. Rather than inspecting their gear the week before they start jumping again, what should they be looking for as they put stuff away so that when it's time to jump again, they don't have to run to their friendly neighborhood rigger to have a line set? Or so what would people...
I mean, all the riggers out there are going to kill me, I mean, by saying a lot of the stuff, because, I mean, what rigger doesn't like a rush job on a pack job?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, realistically, we should be taking care of our gear. If it's a main, depending upon the type of material that the main's built out of, if it's especially with, like, the Petras and the Peregrines and stuff like that that are sail material, we should be opening it, folding it carefully. Putting it in a stash bag, and then, like I said, keeping it in a cool, dry place.
Sure.
If you are one of those people that, you know, leaves your stuff packed up, it should definitely be opened up after a long period of not jumping.
You mean like a year?
like a year, or I mean even 6 months. I mean, like I said, I'm the worst example of it, but I had one of my Petras that was sitting for about 6 months. Just because I hadn't jumped it and
sure.
Hooked it up and put a jump on it. I mean, it was an okay opening, but I could definitely see some wear and tear. It definitely had some creases in it when I brought it back down, and some marks that it wouldn't have otherwise had I left it in good condition, opening it up, laying it out, putting like a paragliding pack job on it or something like that, where you're just folding it up nicely and not cramming it into a D bag and leaving it there.
Sure.
That type of material really, you know, even though it's amazing material, it doesn't like to be stored like that.
Do you recommend leaving it in the rig, or do you recommend taking it out and maybe doing a rigger roll and putting it in a plastic bag or something?
That's exactly it. So doing a rigger roll, putting it, if you're jumping a canopy like that, you should have a stash bag for it, or something that's made out of either nylon or something that's made out of a material. You know, a lot of us have, we'll have bags that we move, you know, we'll have a canopy for speed. So we'll put that into, into a D bag, put it into a carrying bag that's made a little bit bigger.
Sure.
What I do is I'll take my Petrod, I'll roll it up, lay it out flat, fold it nicely along the seams, and then it fits in that bag.
Now, what about for we got a few lower time jumpers that listen that want to know, okay, I just got my first rig and I'm not flying a Petra, so I don't have to do any of this shit.
No, what should I mean, still keep it in a cool, dry place. If you're not sure of what to do, you can stick it into a plastic tub. You can leave the reserve the way it is, you know, leave it packed, leave it sealed, but make sure you plan to go see your rigger with plenty of time to get it aired out, inspected, and repacked. As you're doing it, I would definitely still recommend the same thing. You know, pop that main out if you have the space to do it. We don't really want to leave it packed up, but it's not going to really hurt it if you do.
Sure.
It.
Well, they've found over all these years some pretty interesting shit in reserves, conditions of reserves that have been left for a long time in bad conditions and stuff. What's the strangest shit you've seen?
I've seen mold. I've seen holes from and rat droppings from mice have gotten into it because people have left it in their garage without having it in a tub or anything like that. They just had it in a regular gear bag, and the mouse found its way past the zipper and, you know, decided to make a winter home for itself.
Jesus Christ. That's a pretty goddamn expensive rat's nest.
Yeah. The mold is probably one of the worst. I mean, it's really hard to get the mold. I mean, I guess it's not worse than holes in your canopy, but I mean, it's
sucks either way.
Either way, it's
right.
That's a pretty expensive fuck up.
So now, besides the gear, again, you were giving me shit because I haven't jumped in quite a while. For people that have gone a long time without staying current, or they've been very sporadically current as they're getting back into the season, which the U.S. will be doing in a few months. What do they need to be doing? First off, what are the legal requirements, and then what are the smart things to do?
Well, the requirements are obviously by license. Mm-hmm. If you're not sure what it is, you can go to USPA.org, look in the SIM and the Skydiver Information Manual, and in the section covering licenses, it'll talk about what your requirements are per license. But for anybody that's taken any time off, and myself included, you know, I've been out with an injury, but I'm still constantly going over emergency procedures. I'm constantly teaching emergency procedures. So that's the biggest thing, is go over your emergency procedures before you're getting out. Make sure you're getting into a harness, you're pulling handles, you're getting used to, you know, to what you should be doing, because complacency is the one thing in our sport that kills. Mm. So don't be complacent. Don't think that just because you have thousands of jumps that you can go up and no problem, you know, you're going to be fine. Right? I've got thousands of jumps and I still constantly go through my emergency procedures. And it's funny because I teach it, and this is one of the few things that I teach and I do all the time. Every jump, I expect the worst opening of my life. Mm. So I go out, do my jump, everything else. I pitch, and as I pitch, I always grip my teeth and I'm waiting.
Sure.
And when it's an amazing opening, I'm like, woo, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But when it's not, I'm ready. I'm expecting the worst, and any situation that's going to happen, I'm going to be ready for to – you know, go through my emergency procedures and do them like they're second nature. I don't have to think about it. I look at it, I see it, and then I know what's coming.
Sure. Well, that's one of the huge benefits to modern canopies, though, is they all open pretty fucking nice by comparison.
I mean, yeah, they're a lot better than they used to be, for sure.
Well, we were just talking about the differences in a bunch of canopies and upsizing and downsizing and all that, and you had mentioned that one of the all-around best performers you've flown in a while is the Leia.
Yep. Hats off to NZ Air Sports. They've done a great job. Julian did a really good job working with the canopies and designing stuff and the test jumpers there and everything. But yeah, the Leia is, I mean, it's an amazing flying wing.
No, I was asking you, like, what are the characteristics of it? Because I don't have any experience on that canopy. My only really high-performance experience is on a Velo.
Yep. So, I mean, it's the step above what I would say the step above the Velo and the JVX and the things along that side of it. So the Velos and the JVXs were the first of the cross braces. Mm. This is a little bit newer of a design, obviously. It's a little bit thinner profile. It's twitchier, just like the Valkyrie. It's PD. side, you know, the Valkyrie and the Leia. They both fly amazing. They both open really nice. They're definitely a step above with the other ones, the Velos and the JVXs.
Sure.
But, I mean, they did a great job with it.
Granted, I've been doing this a while now, but it seemed like they just made such leaps, because it doesn't seem like it was all that long ago to me that the Velocity was the most insane canopy you could possibly get, and now it's kind of just a mid-range canopy now.
I mean, it's still not a mid-range canopy. It's still a high-performance canopy.
But a stiletto would be considered a high-performance canopy still, wouldn't it?
Spinletto.
Yeah, man. Dude, hey, talk as much shit as you want, but I used to love my stiletto.
Hey, I had one as well.
Yeah.
I had one as well. They were great canopies, and they were definitely, elliptical canopies. They were twitchy. They were fun. You could yank on a toggle and get up alongside of it horizontal and see the wing, the bottom skin of the wing with the ground in the view. And it's older technology, right? The designs have come so much further. They're really questionable how much further they can go from where they are.
Yeah, it was when I talked to Julian Peelman from NZ Aerosports about all the designs and stuff and doing the next step and kind of talking about the Leia and all these. And he's like, yeah, man, trying to kick it up that next notch is tough.
Yeah, I know that they've been working on the Petra 2 for a while. They've been working on another canopy that they were calling Anna. I don't know what the progress is with that stuff.
Sure.
Right now, I know they've discontinued the JVX, which I was a little bit heard about. The JVX is right. Definitely will always be my tried and true canopy. I mean, it's great for freestyle and everything, but I know that it was just a matter of time that they had to take the next step with everything. And
sure,
Leia is definitely that wing. So
and again compared to what I've flown, what are the flight characteristics like?
Twitchier. It's a little bit more ground hungry than what you're used to. Great recovery, great openings. I found that the layer doesn't seem to seek as much as even like my JVX used to be a little bit twitchier on the openings. Have to really be square. I mean, the layer is still similar,
sure.
It's a next level for openings. I mean, it's a nicer opening canopy for sure.
Well, I mean, I learned that lesson a long time ago. The whole you got off of the stilettos, which you would fly the opening.
Yep.
And I mean, you were on the rear risers and you were just swinging all over in the harness to keep those things straight. And you would do it so automatically and so naturally that every opening was bang on straight because you were flying the fuck out of it without thinking about it. But I tried that on my very first opening on a Velo way back in 2004 and did a high opening. So not only was I trying to fly the Velo opening, but I was doing it at fucking 12,000 feet. And holy shit, I thought I was going to cut that thing away on my very first ever jump on my brand new canopy at 12,000 feet.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that's sub 100, you need to be a little bit more aware on the openings. You need to fly them a little bit more.
Sure.
Make sure that you're square in the harness. You know, as everything's opening up, reach up, grab a hold of the risers, and get ready to,
yeah,
to see what's going to happen. I mean, it doesn't take much, especially on the high performance canopies, to have one of them take off. I mean, it's as little as over rolling the tail or making keeping
sure.
the tail too tight. And the way it catches air, it may want to spin one way or the other.
Sure.
Being off on your harness a little bit, so.
I don't know if you got a chance to hear the chat that I had with Luigi, but you know what he's got planned.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Pretty amazing.
Fucking hell. Well, it was funny because we spent a good part of the conversation with him telling me how, he's mellowed with age and he's calmed down. And again, like most of the amazing athletes, he's very forthcoming in the fact that he was scared when he was learning how and he didn't know if it was for him. And he's telling me he's getting more and more mellow. And then on camera, because we were on Skype, he holds up the new canopy from NZ Aerosports, and I shit you not, it was in a thick legal envelope. I mean, you got to be kidding me. That's what are like the first thing I thought was, how in the hell is that in there with the all the nylon and the lines as well? But the lines are the shoestring little lines, aren't they?
Yeah, they're probably 200s.
Fucking hell, dude.
200, 300s.
And how many jumps is something like that good for, the lines?
It depends on which. it depends on how it's packed. Typically, when and every swooper is going to tell you something a little bit different. Typically, for me, when I'm doing flying competition, I keep my line sets at about 100 to 120 jumps, and then I'm changing them.
Wow.
And that's just for safety. I mean, they could go more than that. Back in the day, I was jumping a prototype line for a guy named Mark Lancaster out of North Carolina. He was doing some new line trims and designs, and I was playing with a couple different trims that I liked, and he got a new line. He's like, it's a 180-pound test. He's like, I don't know how many jumps it's going to get. He's like, do you mind testing it? He's like, I'll put the line set on for free for you if you test me and tell me how many jumps till failure. Sure, yeah, no problem. So, I mean, and I was using it. That was my work canopy as well. So I'm working on it, you know, camera gear and everything else. And one of the lines that we had, I think I got maybe, if I'm lucky, I got 100 jumps out of it.
Really?
And it they just exploded on me on one of the openings. I lost a couple of lines, cut it away, got it back, sent it to him, told him it was like just under 100, and he put another line set on and changed the trim a little bit, and we did it again, and you know.
Yeah, that whole test jumping stuff, no thanks. there's nothing in regard to skydiving equipment I need to test.
Yeah. I mean, we're testing the lines, but I mean, I know Maha.
Yeah.
I think Maha's been on with you as well.
He has, yeah.
Maha was testing some lines for PD back in the day as well. It was like a spiral twist. And I don't want to butcher it because I don't remember exactly, but I know he had some fail on opening and other stuff. I mean, it's a way, sure. The only way to find out is to test it. And
well, I mean, it's obviously changed dramatically. Shit, we used to jump the lines way back in the day until they looked like fucking ragged out shoestrings.
But that's because we were poor skydivers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot of poor skydivers listening, I guarantee, especially after this fucking year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was the same way. I would jump my line sets. As long as it wasn't anything that looked really bad, I would jump my line sets usually until
failure.
Until something would blow up, and then I'd be like, yep, I probably should have changed that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, but that's just kind of the, yeah, old days.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recommend that for anybody. You know, use the manufacturer's recommendations for a number of jumps. Keep a log of how many jumps you're putting on your line set, especially if you're flying competition wings, if you're flying, you know, Leias, Valkyries, Petras, Peregrines, stuff like that.
I mean, sure.
By all means, keep a good jump number. A lot of my fellow competitors, they know exactly how many jumps are in each line set.
Sure.
They jump, you know, a canopy 10 times. At the end of the day, they mark it in a book or electronic on their phone or something like that. Like, you know, this Petra has this many jumps on it, sure, on the line set.
So
they know when it's time to change it and make sure that they got good lines before competition.
Well, fuck yes. Especially because in competition, I'm assuming that's when you're pushing the absolute hardest.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're 100% for something like that. Now, we were talking about getting ready from being on current. You were talking about emergency procedures and stuff like that and license stuff. For the lower time jumpers, are you recommending going out and doing coach jumps? Are you talking about canopy course type stuff?
It just depends on how many jumps they have, right? I mean, the more jumps you have, the little bit longer we can go without needing everything, where it's a little bit more in the back of our brain. You know, people that don't have a license yet are going to have to do recurrency jumps, or maybe if you have an A license or if it's been too long and you have a B license or even C license, you may have to go out and do a recurrency jump with an instructor or with a coach. I mean, go do it. Don't bitch about it.
Sure.
Chalk it up to, it's one of those things that we got to do to stay current. You know, what we do is dangerous. It's fun, but it can be dangerous, and that's why these rules are in place. I mean, other people have paid the price so that we can learn and we can have a better sport.
Yeah, well, skydiving is definitely the one sport I can say you want to learn from other people's mistakes. Yeah.
I think, what is it, Bill Booth that says it best? He said, you know, the gear keeps getting better and the people keep getting dumber. So,
yeah, that's kind of the fucked up part about it, right? Is the gear makes up for so many of the shortcomings that we get away with a lot of stuff that we would not have gotten away with before.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the number of jumps in between cutaways, and it's gone up significantly since we started, you know, where it used to be every 800 jumps you'd have a cutaway.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And now it's you're seeing, you know, people, I know people that have got thousands and thousands of jumps that have never had a cutaway before.
Yeah, I know.
And then I'm out there with, you know, 40 reserve rides.
Right. Well, I remember vividly on my first cutaway, I had, you know, less than 30 jumps and had a one of my instructors was actually jealous because, or not my instructors, but one of the fun jumpers, high time fun jumpers with 3,000-4,000 jumps at the time. And this is years and years ago, had never had a cutaway. And he's all, fuck, man, I'm jealous. What do you mean you're jealous? That was horrible. He's on, no, you answered the question. You could pull the handles. You did what you were supposed to do. I've got fucking this many thousand jumps. I've still never had to pull the handles in a real situation. And I'm like, yeah, I suppose that's kind of cool.
I had my first cutaway was under 200 jumps, and it was on safety day of all days. And nice. I think I said this before on one of our podcasts. My rigger had packed my reserve, finished it that morning. Everybody was going through doing their safety seminar stuff, and
sure,
it wasn't my turn to go into the office and go through some stuff. So I actually went up and I was jumping and I cut away, come down. I interrupt the DZO at the time, you know, who's also the rigger, run in, give him a big kiss on the forehead. I was like, thanks for the save.
Nice.
And walk out. He's like, wait a second, I just fucking packed that thing, you cocksucker.
Nice.
I'm like, does this mean I don't have to come back in and do my emergency procedure review? Because clearly I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, just did it. Well, I think on the Steve Hubbard chat, I had said my first cutaway may or may not have been a brake fire. I'm not – to this day, I don't know. All I know is that it opened up in a relatively mellow turn, which now all these years later with all this experience later says probably was a brake fire, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So once again, I think I said it on that one too. Sorry, Kurt. I may have chopped a perfectly good pack job. And he had a flawless record at that. He was pissed because I've never packed a fucking malfunction before, and he was not happy.
Well, I mean, it happens.
Yeah, it does.
The statistically speaking, it's going to happen to everybody.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I've packed my fair share of them for myself. Most of them have been, you know, line breaks, but.
Right. I think, knock wood, I've never chopped one of my own pack jobs. All of mine have been gifts from other people. But I never blamed anybody else. I took responsibility for every one of them because I put the rig on my back. Yeah. You know, I'll never forget some guy in Paris Valley. Again, this is way back when I just started, got all pissed off because the packing mat had packed him a cutaway. And he got all mad and threw his rig down and was yelling at the packer. And the packer just smiles and went, dude, you pay. I think at the time we were paying like $3 or $4 bucks for a pack job.
Yeah.
And they're like, you paid $4 for that. Fuck off. Like, really?
Yeah, I gave myself my last one.
Did you?
I had, and I called it too. I was doing a commercial, and I was doing some stunt work for a commercial, and I was, you know, jumping in a sandy area, and every jump I was landing in the sand, and every jump I'd come back in and pack, and I could feel the lines getting stickier because it was, and you know, in the middle of summer, so it was humid, and which is weird to say humid and sandy, but
yeah,
it was humid and sandy, and every jump I could feel it. And the second to last jump, I told Nicole, I'm like, man, I'm like, even if I have a cutaway in this one, I was like, I'm still gonna, you know, swoop my reserve. Right. And she's like, I could feel it's getting sandier. No shit. Went up and that same jump, I opened up and I had tension knots.
Oh.
Just from the sand and everything.
She's like, you
jinxed yourself.
Yeah. Well, we'd get shit like that all the time in Vegas. And it's the same in Eloy, I would imagine, because it's so dusty and dirty all the time. We'd go to Paris Valley. We'd drive down from Vegas and jump in Paris Valley. And the first couple of openings, as soon as we'd open, there'd be a huge cloud of fucking dust, from every opening. And a couple of people actually asked us if we were like putting talcum powder or something in our canopies to make it do that. And we're like, no, we're just from Vegas.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
No, the life on the fucking canopies is through the floor in conditions like that. I mean, it's a joy to be landing on grass and in clean conditions. It extends the life of your equipment huge.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big deal.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was joking around, you know, when I got the canopy back after I cut it away and I was looking at everything, I was like, I very easily put 100 jumps on my lines in those 10 jumps.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, sweating and packing quick.
Sweating, packing quick, landing in sand and just the humidity from moving around because it was summertime and just...
Yep, yeah, that'll do it.
It was... They were doomed from the beginning.
Yeah. So while you're physically fucked and hobbling around like an old man, you're going to do canopy courses and stuff, yeah?
Yeah. The plan is just while I'm still recovering from everything, just do some canopy coaching and, you know.
You're falling apart.
Huh?
You're falling apart.
I mean, a little bit.
A little bit? You're how old are you now?
I don't want to say.
How old are you now?
42, going on 62.
Right? That's about what I was going to say. So 42, your lower back is fucked, your middle back is fucked, your neck is fucked, your shoulder's fucked.
Both shoulders, yeah.
Both shoulders. Is this all from skydiving?
Yeah.
What'd you do wrong over the years? How'd you fuck yourself up so bad? And how do the lower time jumpers that are listening not end up as miserable fucking cunt as you are?
I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a miserable cunt. I take this pain with a smile on my face. I mean,
well, so that's the thing, right? That's the overlying comparison of all our generation's jumpers is all of us have just learned to deal with constant, never-ending pain.
Yeah. I was really good until about 8 years ago. And I had a couple of really bad openings, and that kind of just started the downward spiral. You know, I had a couple of really, really hard openings that did some damage to my back when I had my back surgery. And even though it recovered and I was doing really good for a while, it's just one of those things that, you know, you get a couple of disc prolapses and
sure. Well, and here's the huge benefit to being a modern lower time jumper just starting, especially the ones that want to get into flying camera and stuff, is the equipment is so much better. I mean,
yep.
Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm the same. My neck is fucked because of hard openings with, you know, a brick strapped to my head.
That's exactly it. Like that's the same thing. Like about 8 years ago, 7 years ago is when I jumped the red for the first time.
Oh, Jesus.
Jumping the red, I mean, it's, I don't know the equivalent would be in pounds, but I remember because I was jumping everything on the helmet with the battery and everything. I think it was 8 kg.
It's fucking heavy.
So 16 pounds.
Yeah.
On my helmet. Every time I would pitch, I'd pitch and grab my chin cup.
Yep. Well, who is it? McGowan that jumped religiously with the neck brace and
smart.
Well, he had to. He had a fucking movie theater strapped to the top of his head.
I mean, and I give him credit, you know, to Mike and Tom Sanders and, well, like, and all those guys, Joe Jennings.
Joe Jennings back in the day, man. I remember watching
Norman
him.
Norman Kent. All these guys that were jumping ridiculous camera gear.
Yeah, man. Well, I remember watching the one that caught me off guard the most was watching the X Games. Fuck, this would have been, what, mid-90s? Early to mid-90s when they were doing the tailgate sky surfing competition over the beach in California and Jennings was doing the air-to-ground transmissions. So he had that huge white transmitter strapped to the top of his head, but he still had his fucking camera filming as backup in case that didn't work because they had to be able to judge the competition. Yep. I remember watching that. He's on his back doing the tidy bowl carve with just that fucking big white thing sticking off the front of his head, and remember thinking that cannot be good for his neck.
No, I mean, it's one of those things that it definitely, it's wear and tear.
Yeah, man.
Throwing a lot of drogues.
Well, I was throwing a lot of drugs too. Yeah, I was talking briefly to Jennings because I'm actually gonna be sitting down and talking to him on an upcoming episode.
Mm-hmm. And very nice.
I was giving him shit. I'm like, so, you know, by the way, you're the one I have to blame for, you know, fucking major neck problems over all these years. And he's like, yeah, oops.
But I mean, I think it's Joe that used to jump wings on every jump, just so he could slow down the opening.
Yeah.
Last time I saw him, he was even jumping him. So he would have like free fly pants on with like a modified wing jacket. I mean, he would free fly with it and everything, but when it came time to deploy, he used the wings to slow down a little bit before pitching.
Now, I've been out of the work jump thing for a very long time, especially shooting camera. I stopped shooting video in 2005. But for a long time, wings seemed to kind of go away. A lot of people weren't jumping with wings anymore, but I've seen this huge resurgence now where pretty much every camera flyer I see is flying wings. They're just free flying the shit out of them.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on where you are. And there was that period of time I started with wings, got away from them, went back to them. And the main reason why I went back to the wings and got away from flying with just a jumpsuit on is because of the position, right? I don't want to be underneath a tandem.
Yeah.
It's illegal for me, especially as an examiner.
Sure.
Right? If anybody flies underneath me, we come down, I pull them aside, and I have a little talk with them about, you know,
sure,
what's going on. There's no reason, you know, I think, I forgot where the fatality was, where the camera flyer was flying underneath, had a premature, hit the tandem.
Yeah. Tandem passenger was his
passenger. The tandem passenger, I think, was his mother.
It was mom. Yeah.
And there was a fatality because of it, and there's just no reason for it. And I think that has a lot to do with why, wings have come back, because it allows you to stay away.
Sure.
And you know, you're still able to fly around. You're still able to go to your head and carve around the tandem if you want to, or orbit around on your feet. You know, it just gives you more power.
I had no choice. I had to fly wings. I mean, from pretty much the time I started flying camera, I've gone between 180 to almost 200 pounds without gear. I fall like a fucking brick. I'm 5'9". You know,
yeah.
So I fall like a brick strapped to another brick. I go fucking fast. So if I don't have a big set of wings on me, I'm not going to be able to fall slow enough to film at least half of the tandems that come out. I used to love it when I was shooting video and saw these big fat guys come out to jump. Bring it on. Now I don't have to work. It's going to be easy. I just get to relax on this jump. You know, they'd assign me the little teeny little next to nothing Japanese passenger. And the entire time I'm as big as you can possibly get with zero range, praying to God that the tandem instructor takes a pity on me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had that. Luckily I've worked in a lot of places where either the manifest staff or the jump staff that I worked with were really great guys and girls to work with. I mean, they'd sure be willing to switch if, you know, if you had somebody, if I was paired up with a small tandem instructor and they had a small passenger, I could go to one of the other videographers that was smaller and lighter than me and be like, hey,
please,
would you mind, you know, I'll buy you a beer later. Just swap me for this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Or if they paired me up with somebody for the day, I'd be like, would you swap me for the day, please?
Right.
Beer's on me.
Oh, yeah.
And they were nice enough to do it. So
oh, fair enough. And,
I mean, there's always those times that you got to work a little bit harder.
So now back to these injuries, you old fucker. You envision being able to get back in the air, I would assume.
I really hope so. Mm. I mean, this isn't maybe not to the level that I was working at before. I don't know if I'm gonna be the guy out of the drop zone doing, you know, 800-1,000 jumps.
Hmm.
You know, working jumps, you know.
Does throwing. That even sound appealing?
Right now it does.
All right, fair enough.
Right now I would sell both my left and right nut just to get back up in the air. It's been
– For sure.
This is the longest layoff I've had in my entire career, so.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, there's times that we just got to stop, and luckily with everything that's happened with, as Kevin Hart says, vid-19.
yeah, no shit.
With everything that's happened with COVID, I mean, it's a perfect time to be down and getting everything fixed that needs to be fixed. But
yeah,
I mean, it was going to be either now or later. So I might as well take the downtime and get the stuff, because I've been get everything fixed. I mean, I've been working injured for the last 3 years.
Well, were you like me? I was horrible with like stretching and all that stuff. I was big on strength training, especially when I started doing tandems, because I knew that was going to really come in handy, especially the upper body strength to be able to, you know, flare out those old F-111 tandem canopies and handle the massive fucking loads that you'd have to deal with. But I was horrible with flexibility. Like to this day,
I'm the same way.
I think that's probably what fucked us up more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, newer instructors and jumpers out there, definitely, not saying you have to go out and become a professional yoga, but,
stretch.
But stretch. I mean, stretch out your neck, stretch out your, you know, your shoulders, especially, you know, people that are newer swoopers that are coming up through that are wanting to become competitive swoopers, start stretching your shoulders out. If you're a tandem instructor and you're, you know, doing a bunch of jumps every weekend or every day, stretch your shoulders out, stretch your neck, stretch your back. You know, it's only going to help you. It can't hurt.
I think I said to Omar when I talked to him on here that at Eloy, I remember walking out, and I think it was Sean McCormick was doing yoga on the mat with a bunch of people every morning in Eloy. And I was out there with a friend who was getting licensed. And I remember walking past the mat going, "What the fuck are those guys doing?" Because I didn't think anything about yoga. This was a long time ago. And now I wish.
Yep.
I wish that while she was jumping, I had been having Sean McCormick teach me fucking yoga.
Yeah, I mean, walking around the drop zone and seeing Soul Flyer, seeing Fred and Vince out, and Vince, may rest in peace, would always be doing yoga in the morning. And yeah. I remember for a while when he would come out to the drop zone, there wasn't anything. And then one time he showed up and he started doing yoga. And I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Man," he goes, "I started doing yoga not that long ago." He's like, and I noticeably feel better every day. He said, especially if I'm doing it a little bit before I start jumping, he goes, "I feel 1,000 times better at the end of the day."
Well, and at the level that they were going at, and especially flying those powered wings, doing the Jetman stuff was so physically demanding. Because, I mean, they made it look so easy flying the wing that it looks like they're just along for the ride. And you don't realize that they are using every inch of their bodies, and they are, you know, the control surfaces, and it's extremely physically demanding.
Yep.
Like, those jumps were beating the living hell out of them. Or can't even call them jumps. Those flights were beating the living hell out of them. So you'd have to do stuff like that.
Yep. And he said it was doing wonders for him. And after he said something about that, I started, you know, taking it a little bit more serious. I mean, he was a good friend and somebody that I looked up to with some of the skill that he had. I mean,
sure.
I realized that, you know, all the stuff that I've seen people doing over the years, you know, maybe a few of those people may know a little bit more than I do about certain things. And when he was saying that, you know, he was just feeling that much better at the end of a day of jumping, I was like, I should probably start stretching a little bit.
For sure. Well, I remember when I was lucky enough to do the formation flights with them when they were doing that. You were around too, and we were forming up, and the Jetman was flying with the Twin Otter.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I was shooting photos out of the back of one of the Twin Otters.
Exactly. And we were all lucky enough to be formed up, and I remember looking out the fucking window as I'm flying the Otter at Vince and Fred, and it was it Ives there as well?
Eves
there as well. And all three of them, and I'm like, all right, these guys are just kind of the next level human with what these fucking guys are doing.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I've got a pretty good shot, and it's just of Eves and Vince, and they've almost got the edge of the wing inside the door, the jump door of the Otter.
Oh, was that the Otter? Yeah, it was the Otter. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I was shooting out of the back of one of the Otters.
Absolutely.
It was incredible to see it that close.
Well, and who was it when we were flying the Sherpa? Because I was flying the Sherpa, and they were forming up on the back of the Sherpa because they wanted to see how close they could get before they were in the wake of the plane. And he practically flew into the back of the plane. I don't know if it was Eves or Vince.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one. I heard the stories afterwards.
Oh,
I think you had said something to me about it. And
dude, well, and of course, I couldn't look because I was flying the fucking plane, and the way the Sherpa was set up, there's no way I would have been able to see where they were anyway. But I remember being, you know, they're yelling and everybody screaming and having a blast as I'm flying the plane, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. This is crazy.
Next level human flight, for
sure.
Oh,
yeah, man. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so when you got somebody like that that's pushing the limits so hardcore, saying stretch, maybe listen.
I mean, I wish I would have listened years ago.
Yeah, all those 20-somethings that are just getting started, or even if you've been jumping for a while, but you feel great, but you're not stretching and stuff, fucking start stretching. Take it from a couple of old guys that are paying the price for having not done it.
And I'll tell you what, with everything that's happened, that's kind of shut us down for between COVID and for winter times up in parts of the States and parts of Europe. I mean, this is a time when we're not moving as much as we're used to, is when we start feeling all the aches and pains that we've accumulated over the years. So,
dude, I don't know about you, but 3 nights a week I go to bed with an ice pack.
Yep.
at least, or wake up and go get an ice pack, which is a very odd thing, because if you had told me when I was in my 20s that eventually I would be able to fall asleep better with a fucking ice pack on me, but now it's almost the rest of me is nice and warm, and it's my little comfort pillow is this little gel ice pack that stays cold for a couple hours.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to alternate. Some days it's cold, some days it's the heating pad. It just depends on what my body's telling me. But I've started waking up and doing some self physiotherapy, some stretching, and some moving around just to kind of get everything loosened up. And
between pain and piss, I don't sleep through the night.
Yeah. You got that old man bladder. That's what the problem is.
Dude, man. Well, I told you I'm trying to stay super healthy. So right now I only have coffee in the morning, and then I'm drinking just fucking water, which I know this shit keeps me alive, but I'm not a big water fan. But now I'm drinking like 3 or 4 liters of water a day, and I'm just, yeah, it's crazy.
But it's help.
So, moving on into 2021, you're doing canopy courses. You're also doing some traveling, yeah?
Yeah, plan on doing some traveling, doing some, hopefully doing some stuff with some teams, doing a little bit of coaching and stuff like that.
Nice.
We'll see what happens. We'll see when my body is ready to get back up in the air. But I'd love to be able to start jumping now, but I just need to be smart about it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's gonna happen, but need to get healthy first. And once I'm healthy, then the sky's the limit.
Are you looking at thinking about competing again?
I would love to. We'll see what happens. If there's, depending upon what's happening with Swoop Freestyle, if they get some venues, if some stuff happens with the freestyle side of things, I would definitely consider doing that more than traditional canopy piloting competitions. Not sure my body will handle jumping with all the weight. It's one thing if I'm doing XRW, I can kind of take it easy on myself. But if I'm pushing and I'm charger for the box, or I'm charger for distance, taking those hits, then you've had a bunch of canopy pilots on here. You've talked to a bunch of them. I mean, it's wear and tear on our body for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And let's be honest, I'm not getting any younger.
Nope. Nope.
I would be open for some competition.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Get
healthy first and then go from there.
All right. So if you're going to be doing some traveling and you're doing potential canopy courses and all that stuff, how do people track you down again? How do people follow Mr. Ludwig?
They can get me on my website, www.davidludwig.com, or they can get me on Facebook, which is David Ludwig and then quotations Junior. Grab me on Instagram, David Ludwig, and get a hold of me. Send me a message, and if I'm in your area, if you guys are in my area, love to get hooked up with some people and teach them some stuff.
Awesome, man. Good tips for taking care of gear. Good tips for trying to take care of your body. Thanks for sitting down.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me again.
All right, fucker. See you later.
Later.
See ya.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe Podcast, brought to you as always by, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as NZ Aerosports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or The Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
damn.